Hello and welcome to Roll for Topic, a roundtable discussion about topics related to running role-playing games. I'm Chris Salzman.
And I'm Andy Rao.
Andy, this is take two. We just had some technical difficulties.
Both of us sounded maybe like three or four. Actually.
Yeah, right? Yeah. I always think about that scene in The Matrix where he's kind of like going into The Matrix for the first time and he goes through the phone yeah. line. Yes. And it just looks like this bit crushed thing. It's yes. such a cool effect. That's what we sounded like when we were talking to each other. So we decided to stop. We readjusted and stuff. We're going to get into, we have a topic, right? So, Andy, I'll cue you up on that in a little bit, but, so we're going to talk just real quick. I wanted to get something out about a Stranger Things rewatch that I'm doing. And then we're going to go into Andy's topic, which he will preview right now.
Yeah. The topic we'll be discussing today, Chris, is what do you do as a GM when your players don't act or react to your role-playing scenario in the way you planned? Maybe the way you planned so much that you based the entire scenario around your expectation of how they yes, would respond. Yeah.
You kick them out of your table, yeah. But right.
it's a good one. That could be the answer we could be around.
Yeah, so. Yeah, we'll see, yeah. Okay, so we're going to get into that in a little bit. But I did want to take us on a slight diversion just to talk about Stranger Things. So, Andy, I've been rewatching the first season of Stranger Things. And I've been just enjoying it, quite a bit. The couple things that I wanted to point out, right? So I know, we had just talked, right? So again, technical difficulties. So we've had part of this conversation already, but you had mentioned that you sort of noped out more recently. And I think that's totally
yes.
fair.
It got a little big. The scale of it got a little too big for me.
Yeah, which is very true. I am enjoying that show, but it is also just way too big for its britches at this point. So let's just remember really liking season one, especially Winona Ryder's performance. So I've been going back and rewatching season one and just enjoying it quite a bit. It's really well done. I think it holds up. Maybe 9-10 years later or so from when it first premiered. The kids are really good. Yeah, Winona Ryder is awesome. Right, it's like. All the performance is really great. Music's really great. We're a tabletop role-playing game podcast, right? So part of the draw, I think, of talking about it here and then also rewatching it was I just wanted to sort of see how much D&D was sort of was in that first season.
Mm-hmm. Because when that first season came out, D&D, 5th edition D&D was relatively newly out, I think. I think Critical Role was maybe on the ascent.
Yeah.
And then Stranger Things. So D&D was having a moment.
Yeah, it was having a real moment. And part of me, I'd be curious how much of that was coordinated and how much of that just was luck of the draw, right? For Wizards of the Coast at the time. But Stranger Things, it pretty much opens on when you see the kids, they're playing D&D together, right? And it's really seeded throughout the story. They're sort of understanding themselves and the world and then also what's kind of going on with them through the lens of these, D&D adventure books and stuff, right? They're trying to figure it out. The Demogorgon, right, is a big thing from season one, right? They're trying to understand what their reality is sort of based on the things that they know in this fantasy game that they're playing, too, right? And so they talk about themselves as a party and you don't split the party and all that sort of stuff comes up in it. So it's really wonderful and I just love the sense of nostalgia that I get watching it, thinking about all the games that I played with my friends, back at that age too. Right. And then now that I have kids as well, looking at them and being you're in for such a treat over the next couple of years, especially my daughter who's 10, right? She's just going to have all these really fun experiences that she's going to look back on as these are these pivotal things that you think about childhood and that's what you think about. So I don't know. I've been enjoying it quite a bit and I'd recommend it to anyone else who's still sort of, not totally burnt out on Stranger Things.
Yeah. So you'll have to refresh my memory a little bit. Do mm-hmm. you feel like Stranger Things gets, obviously, so D&D is an important part of the plot in some way. Do you feel like it's real D&D that they're talking about? Do you get the sense that the people, the show makers understand what makes D&D tick? And I say that because, a lot of times, I've seen over the years, different references to D&D, but they'll be playing a board game or something or a miniatures mm-hmm. game or something that isn't quite right. Am I making sense? Do you think they get D&D?
Yeah, I think they do. Right. I think they really do. And I'm sure it is, the creators, the Duffer brothers, maybe. I'm sure they played it as kids and, Yeah, like that. Because, like, they're just, the references are specific enough, but also broad enough that it's like, okay, yeah, like, they either had someone on set who really knew their stuff, or they did really get it, right? I mean, I think, like, at some point someone mentions armor class, right? Like, it's like, you know, they sort of get it. And what I also appreciate is, at least in this first season, even when they show sort of, like, where they're playing, it's just down in a basement. It's like at like a card table, right? And like, you know, the DM screen, I think, might even just be like someone's folder, right? Like, you know, folder setup, right? So it has that feel of like, oh, these kids are just playing a game. It's not like they're playing like, I don't know. It's not like they cut to a shot of like the red box or something like that. Like, you know, like where they're like really trying to hammer home, like, this is what they're playing. Like, you know, here are the rules. It's just like, oh, they're just playing this game.
Yeah, right? So it, like, doesn't feel like product placement exactly. No. And it doesn't feel like kind of no... slight intended here. It doesn't feel like kind of a Critical Role thing where they've got lights and someone and a professional made a miniature setup for them, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah. And it's even like, I mean, even what they're playing is like, it has that sense of like how kids that age would play too, of like, you know, they're all like, oh no, not the Demogorgon. Like, you know, I'm pretty sure that's what's about to happen. And then it's like, you know, oh, the Demogorgon's there, right? It's like, you know, like everybody sort of knows the twists and turns because they're excited about the twists and turns. And like, that's what happens, right? You know, and like, they talk about like, you know, previous campaigns and stuff and like what happened and all that. So it is a delightful version of it. It is not like a highly produced, version of D&D. So.
Yeah. Well, hey, I'm glad. Mm-hmm. And keep me posted. Yeah, mm-hmm. I can't say I'm feeling the need to rewatch, but maybe I wouldn't mind rewatching that first season. Just to see where, just to remember where it all started.
I would say, you know, it's worth it. I mean, even the first episode, like, you could probably watch the first episode and decide for yourself if you want more. But it's good.
Man, I mean, I think when we were talking earlier, I think you said this was like 10 years ago now.
Uh-huh.
That's terrifying.
I know it is. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, I'm really hoping in this the most recent season they do some sort of time jump so they don't have to keep on trying to be like, yes, these adults are
these like 34 year olds are still juniors in high school. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, all right. Like, let's talk about the topic at hand.
Topic at hand.
Yes. So you had mentioned this, I think, in Discord. I know there's a conversation that I didn't participate in. So yeah.
Yeah. So I threw this question out and there was some discussion of it on the Discord, but I thought it was. The discussion that came out of it was meaty enough that I thought it would be worth sharing it with our listeners here. And then maybe you and I can just chat through on the air here. And then if you're listening and have some ideas for how I could have handled the situation better, I'd like to hear it. So here's the setup. I guess I should start with a couple disclaimers, partly because I think some of the people playing in this game might be listening to this. And so I ran the first part of my Alien game a week or two ago. And it went okay, but it didn't go great.
Yeah.
And I ran into a problem, or at least a challenge, while I was GMing it. And I did eventually figure out a way to resolve it. It took me like 45 minutes or an hour of like kind of tepid gameplay for me to fix on the solution. So here's my disclaimers. It's the players didn't do anything wrong. And the game was still, they all said they had fun. I believe them. Nobody did anything wrong. But I do think that as GM, I should have been able to handle a situation that came up better. So I'll stop delaying. Yeah. And here's the setup, Chris. It's Alien. It's a crew of space truckers. They're in their spaceship. It opens up. You know, I've read all the advice. Don't, you know, open up with something exciting happening. Don't start with a long briefing scene. So they open up. They're getting out of their hypersleep pods. And then the computer alarm is going off that there is an unknown organism on the ship, right? So the idea here is that we go from 0 to 60, that we are in the Alien movie 60 seconds into the game.
Mm-hmm.
So far, so good. But they don't. So it actually is not an alien that's on the ship, but it is crawling around through the vents. I obviously am trying to make them think it's an alien at this point.
Yeah.
So anyway, all that aside. So I had a couple. So I had a couple of pre-generated characters that I set out on the table in advance. There was five players. They all took a look at them. They picked the ones they wanted. I had two players at the table that were brand new to RPGs, essentially. I was really excited to have them at the table. They're wonderful people. I was like, it was a great, it was really exciting to have cool people who were also new and they love the Alien like universe. So However, those two new players, for whatever reason, happenstance, they picked pre-generated characters with these personality traits. One of them picked the lazy captain, whose personality is written out on the character sheet is, look, you just want to get this done. You don't care. And so you're going to sit back and make everybody else do the hard work because you're just here to get the paycheck at the end. Okay, yeah. So that was one of the characters. The second character was like a scaredy cat. And like feeling out of your depth. You don't need this. This is the last thing that you need in your life right now. So those I think are pretty good. If you had those characters in like an, here's how as GM I thought that would play out. I thought that the players would, well, let me tell you what happened. So the alarm goes off. There's an alien or something running around in the ship. So three of the players start doing what I thought everyone would do, which is going room to room with a flashlight and a net, you know, like peering into dark rooms, putting their heads into maintenance shafts, you know, doing the stupid stuff that you do when you're an alien protagonist.
Yeah.
So they're roaming around the ship room by room. The lazy captain, however, looking at his character sheet and thinking, and I had even delivered a lecture. I was like, if you aren't sure what to do, look at your character sheet
and use that
as inspiration. So he's like, well, I'm going to stay up here on the bridge because I'm certainly not going to go mess with whatever this is. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to stay up here on the bridge. And so then the scaredy cat person said, well, there is no way on earth that I am going to go looking for a scary, weird thing running around on the ship. So I'm going to stay up here by myself in the safest room on the ship.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what that meant in practice is that like three people got to roam around and the planned adventure was like, you know, it was planned around the idea that they'd be combing through the ship and
like and all together, right?
Yeah. There'd be jump scares and all sorts of stuff. But instead the party is already split and they're split into one group that is kind of doing what I expected and another group that is, not getting to participate in any of the fun stuff. And again, it's not because they're checked out. They're not checking their phones or whatever. They're literally doing what I told them to do with their characters. So, all right, that's the long-winded problem, Chris. So you're the GM in that situation. You've noticed after 15 minutes, these two players have nothing to do, and all the fun stuff is happening to the other three players.
Yeah.
And you start to panic because the two players are also the new people that you want to make a good impression about RPGs on.
Yes. Yeah.
What do you do, Chris?
Yeah. That is a unfortunate kind of confluence of issues.
Yes.
Yeah. It's and I can totally see how it happened and why it happened. And like, you know, honestly, kudos to those players for like really embracing the fact that like on the character sheet, it's like, hey, like you're not going to go like, put yourself in danger, right? Like for various reasons.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, right, like probably the obvious thing, and this is probably like all also obvious in hindsight, and also you tee me up for it, is like some, like bring the action to them, right? You know, so like, especially if it's not like they're, you know, so now maybe there are two aliens or, you know, two beings sort of, you know, running around in there, or like, you know, kind of incite them to action or incite them to have to do something for the other players. So like maybe those other players hit some sort of like wall or door that cannot be opened unless you are the person who's on the, you know, like on the bridge, right? Like with access to computers or something like that.
Yeah, you have like, the captain's key card to get into the whatever.
Yeah, something like that. And it's like, okay, but the captain has to stay there, so the scaredy cat has to go and deliver the key card or something like that. Right. Like they need physical access to it in some way. So it's like either the captain and the scaredy cat are both going to go together, or the captain's going to be like, hey, you take care of it. I'm going to just stay here by myself. And then, you know, hey, even better. Now you've split the party three ways, like officially three ways. Yeah. So, I mean, that's great. You know, great for a GM. So, I mean, you mentioned.
This is like, already so I think better advice than I figured out on my own, by the way.
Okay. I think that would be my inclination. I mean, I think you're right to have sort of like looked at the time and been like, oh, it's been, you know, 15 minutes since I've checked in with these folks. Right. I think like, and when you were you checking in with them? Were they like trying to do stuff when they were there, or were they just like, I'm just staying put, you know, like.
So they eventually, I mean, it was slightly awkward. So they eventually kind of started to do some stuff. but I don't, but they didn't know what to do, I think, because they didn't really think that it made much sense. So like they eventually went to, I forget, to check on something. So they were trying. So what I ended up realizing, which is what you already mentioned, is that, well, maybe I can, yeah, bring the adventure back to these people. So I just made the decision that as the creature is like getting chased through the vents and the rooms of the ship, whenever it has a choice of where to go, it's going to like head towards wherever these two characters who haven't gotten much to do yet are. And so, and that ended up working pretty well. So the thing was, you know, heading right for them, and then it ended up bursting out of, you know, a hatch in the room with both of those characters in it, and some great role playing happened at that moment. And then everything clicked at that moment, and then and from that point on it was great. And the players were reacting really well. They seemed to be having fun with the role playing and stuff, but you know, unfortunately, you know, it probably was like 45 minutes or an hour before I made that happen. And that's a lot of tension to like bleed out of your game that I thought was going to open with this like high octane bang. Right?
Because I mean, the way you describe it is like, of course, like this is going to be great, right? They wake up from cryo sleep, and then it's like immediate threat. Like, what are you going to do about it? Like, I do wonder too, like, I mean, we've talked about this in the past, I think, on the show. I think there's a certain amount of literacy as a player that I think you need to have with the genre and like the rules and mechanics and stuff. And like, that is really hard to get across to a brand new player in the first session, especially when you're giving them like role playing opportunities, honestly, right? Mm-hmm, you know, I think like something, it's really hard to sort of get people up to speed with the, like, the general flow of how these games work. Because it's like, you know, I think there's a version of both of those characters that they played where they still ended up in sort of the same positions physically, sort of like in the space, but it felt a lot better, right? If that makes sense. Right. So it's like, you know, I'm the scaredy cat, so what I'm going to do is spend the next 15 minutes building my own little bunker, you know, like all by myself. Right. Like, you know, cause I want to make sure that, you know, if something, you know, blasts through that wall, like I've got like my little hidey hole, and like, you know, then you can make decisions about like, well, you're making that big enough for everybody, or is it just for you? Right. You know, or like, you know, the captain, you know, is like, you know, screw this. Like, I don't want to be anywhere near here. I'm going to start, you know, I'm going to set us a new course to, you know, fly back to the nearest like place and get off the ship. Right. Like I think there's some of those decisions that they might have made. But if you're brand new to the game, you're just sort of like, well, I don't know what's going to go on. I'm just going to kind of react to what's happening. And like, hopefully Andy will tell me if something's going wrong, or, you know, nudge me in the right direction. Yeah.
Well, one thing I realized is, you know, this is playing a game. I mean, so the Alien game is, I mean, one of the ways it's different than D&D is in Alien, you're kind of consciously trying to recreate the experience of an alien film, and that's a really different ask than like a D&D, like typical adventure in D&D, or a Call of Cthulhu investigation, or what have you, where you're free to tackle it however you, the player, you know, want to. Whereas in this Alien game, you're kind of being asked not just to play a role playing game, but also to kind of, you know, in a meta way, to be doing not just what the character would do, but what a character in this kind of movie would do.
Yes.
And so like in this kind of movie, the scaredy cat character would actually, I think, come along with everybody else, but their scaredy cat nature would be communicated because they would freak out over in an over the top way to whatever happens. Right. The smart thing to do is exactly what the player did, which is like, I'm not going in there. I'm staying in the well-lit room up here, and I'm closing the doors, right? So, you know, I did think, you know, do I need to stop and say, hey, let's pause the game while I have an out-of-game conversation about, like, here's what it means to, like, act like a character in an Alien movie. But like that felt like a little heavy, and the absolute last thing I want to do is suggest that someone was like playing the game wrong. You know?
Because it's like they weren't playing the game wrong, right? They were right. Playing the game. Yeah, like they would be playing the game wrong if you're like, you know, actually, like, yeah, I'm not interested at all in this character, right? Or like, I want to join the Xenomorph side or something like that, right? Like, so I think there are ways to do it wrong, although still interesting. But like, yeah, it's hard because I think that speech about like, oh, hey, like this is what we're trying to accomplish and stuff, that can work really well in session zero or right before the session. I think you're right on. It feels weird to do it in the middle of a session, although I've certainly done that before where you just kind of like pause and like, hey, look, like this is really going to work a lot better if you stick together, right? Like, you know, or like this is sort of the narrative path we have set up. So like we're going to tell this story together if you can. And I've had players who absolutely just say like, nope, I'm not interested. I'm going to, you know, kind of make my own story. And then I think that's the challenge as a GM is like, you know, how much do you let them do that? And like, what can you spin up and like, how can you have that reconnect, you know, reconnect with the story? Cause I mean, right. And I think that can be really fun. It can also be demoralizing cause it's like, well, I prepped all this stuff. Like why don't you want to interact with it? Yeah. But also like, you know, kind of hard to weave together too. Right. Like, you know, especially if like the tangent that they want to go on doesn't fit within the genre of the story that you're trying to tell. I think like that's where the most friction ends up happening for me is like, oh, like, you know, like, okay, so you're playing Alien, but you know, you are a pacifist or something like that. It's like, well, this is just probably not going to work very well. Like at some point everybody's got to pick up a big gun and try to shoot at this thing. Otherwise it's going to be like just a different story entirely, and you're not going to hit those high points of an Alien movie
How would you have done those pre-gen characters differently than I did?
That's a good question. Oh, so these are ones you came up with, or were these from the book that you
ones a mix of both of those things. I think these these two characters with the personality traits we've been discussing, I think they were pre-gens that I found from the company.
Okay.
But
yeah, I mean, I think they're good, right? Like, so knowing how it went for you, I think the tweak that I would make for the Scaredy Cat, and right, and this is, again, it's hindsight, right? The tweak I'd make for the Scaredy Cat character is like, you, like, I would say like, you're scared of everything, whatever, but there's one person that you trust more than anybody else, and you will not let them out of your sight, right? And that's going to be one of the other players at the table.
That's a good one. Like, that's a good one.
Yeah. And then for, I mean, the captain, it's like, I mean, I would probably give them some sort of secret bonus, right? It's like, hey, like, you want to get paid, and like, you've been told that you will get even more money if you're able to locate, you know, the body of a Xenomorph or something like that.
Yeah.
Right.
Or,
yeah.
Or even something like, you know, you want them to do all the hard work, but you don't trust that they'll do, you know, you need to keep your eyes on them or something like
that. Yeah. Something like that. Like, you know, they're, you know, yeah, like something that really sets them up for like, we will cheer when this guy is the first to get killed.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, what I really want to do is write just a little note on the front, you know, here's their personality, but just remember, you know, get into trouble, right? Like, that's what you want.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes. Get into, oh, that's a good way to put it. Yeah. Get into trouble. Always just always be getting into trouble.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's great.
So have you had a situation like this, Chris? I feel like I talk about Alien an awful lot on this podcast. Have you had a situation like this in other games you've either played in where you felt like you weren't doing whatever the GM kind of expected you to do? Or have you been in the GM seat and the players are just like, this isn't what I thought?
Yeah, I think like especially running one shots for like new folks, like that's where you can really run into this issue. I'm thinking specifically about a Halloween game I ran a few years ago where it's just like there was one player who just wanted to go do something else like entirely with the story, and it's like, oh, okay, I mean, I guess we can try to figure that out. Yeah, and it is like you are scrambling at that in that moment of just like, okay, like I sort of get what you're trying to go for, but also there's this rich story and setting and stuff that we have set up here. Like, why don't you want to interact with that? And it's like, oh, well, I'm interested in seeing what I can do over here. And so like, I mean, I think you got to roll with it and, you know, be firm if it's just not going to work, or see if there's a way to work it into the story. So I've definitely felt that. And then I think at like, playing like con games, like even at Roll for Topicon, I often feel like I'm just like, okay, with a convention game in particular, I think there you have to buy into the premise more than you would basically in any other format of play. Because if you don't, it's just going to be really awkward for everybody at the table, right? So it's like there is that moment of like you're trying to figure out like, okay, like what are we trying to do here, right? Like what's the sort of story and the setting and the genre and all that sort of stuff that we want to do here. And like, I might have a brilliant idea, you know, because I'm like a GM myself. So I'm thinking like, oh, this is going to go this way and that way and this way, right? And if it's not going to do that, that's totally fine. But like, yeah, you need to embrace the fact that like it's going to do that. So like where I feel as a player often, it's just like trying to suss that out in the first few minutes. You know, part of me, like I want to do a good job, right, for the GM too, because it's like, you know, they're trying to do something too on their end. So like, yeah, really trying to make sure that like, yeah, understanding that is like important to me. But I don't know if that's a skill that I've developed. It's not something that I think I would have naturally kind of fallen into without some direction, right?
Yeah,
as a first time player.
Yeah. So there's one other insight I've taken out of this experience that I want to share with you, and it's something I am trying to reassure myself with, and that is I think I need to be better at just being able to enjoy a game that isn't like the best game I've ever played.
Yeah.
Or the best game I've ever run.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been talking for 20 straight minutes about this very trivial issue is that, I don't know. I think I just get inside my own head a little too much when I'm, because I put a lot of prep into this game. You know, I drew these big layouts for the ship. I put a lot of prep into it, and I think I need to maybe just not, like, lowering expectations sounds like a bad thing, but like be content with a game where everyone had a perfectly okay time, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
it didn't,
yeah,
like no one went home and is like, I've got to order every book in this RPG line and get into this hobby for the rest of my life. And,
that's okay.
I mean, at the end of the day, I had a good evening with friends and everyone had a perfectly fine time. And so I am trying to tell myself that to make myself feel better. But I also do think that it's true that I put too much expectation on my own, like, GMing, abilities for this one.
Yeah.
And then when it didn't go quite the way I thought, it felt like a disaster in the moment. I mean, in retrospect, it feels just more like, oh yeah, that was like an average game session. It's not a big deal.
Yeah, I would say for sure. Yeah, you can, you have my permission, not that you need it, to relax your expectations of yourself a bit on that, but yeah.
To lower my expectations for myself. That's what I'm hearing, Chris. So,
yes, yeah. So, that's what I'm saying is, yeah, you need to do worse at all things. Yeah.
So part two of that game is coming up, and I think I'm excited. It is going to go great. I do think the next part of the adventure, they will, it will not, the structure of it is not going to really allow this situation to repeat. And I also am going to go into it a more savvy to this and watching for signs of it happening. So
I think it's gonna be great. I'm looking forward to the recap on that one too. So yeah,
if you haven't heard me talk about the Alien RPG enough, I'll give you some recaps. So,
so this is really good. Yeah, thanks Andy for bringing that topic. I'm excited to hear how it goes, and I think you're definitely thinking the right way. So so we've been Roll for Topic. We're part of the Roll for It Media Podcasting Network. Our sister show, The Splat Book, with John and Jess and Ben, is great. They are back after a little bit of a hiatus with a mailbag episode that I've not listened to quite yet, but I'm really looking forward to. So you go check them out at thesplatbook.com, and then you can also check out Andy and John at Zombie Strains, the zombie podcast. I have listened to the past few episodes that you released. I finally got caught up a bit. I am thankful for your service for covering Weapons, a movie that I will ever watch. But it sounds like you guys enjoyed it quite a bit.
it's a wonderful film. Yeah, I think by the time this episode airs, Zombie Strains will be in the middle of an exploration of a couple of Mexican horror movies. So,
oh, that's awesome. I was going to ask you about that, if you were going to step outside the Hollywood system or not. So I'm glad to hear that.
Every zombie movie, whatever, no matter what, where in the world it takes us, we're going to follow it.
Okay, that's great. The Weapons one in particular, my wife just watched that movie too, so she's been listening to Zombie Strains to kind of get her. So she might have some questions that she'll send you directly.
Tell her to write us in. Yell at us for what we got wrong.
Yeah, cool. All right, well, that does it for us. So I've been Chris Salzman.
I've been Andy Rao.
Remember, if your players are having fun, you're a great GM.